I've been very intrigued by the question of digital currencies, cryptocurrencies, and I've seen that the Bank of France and the European Central Bank as well has decided to embark on a two-year research project in order to evaluate digital currencies. Can you tell us a little bit the difference between cryptocurrencies and digital currencies?
Okay. Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm a former Director General of the Bank of France, but what I will say will neither commit the Bank of France, nor the ECB, nor the Euro system, which is composed of the 19 national central banks. A little bit of a reminder at the beginning, because there are many concepts. One is the crypto assets, as we call them, like Bitcoin, which are not currencies, because currencies have to have classically three functions: unit of measure, mean of exchange, and store of value. And there is no value behind crypto assets like Bitcoin. It's only their scarcity which creates a market value, in addition to the fact that it has been announced that there would be only 21 million units created. And the more you create, the more complicated it is to create a new one, because you have to use what is called mining and more energy. And that creates, by the way, an environmental problem. So these crypto assets have values which vary a lot, 10 times the ones of the dollar or the euro. And as such, they cannot easily be a mean of exchange. It's very difficult to use them as a unit of account. When you want to buy a car, you cannot tell the price in Bitcoin. You have to check the value of the Bitcoin in dollars or in euro. There are some exchanges in these crypto assets, but they represent a high cost also in terms of energy. And these assets miss the main characteristic which is needed for a currency, not only stability, but what is called scalability, which means that they can be used more and more with a decreasing cost. And it is exactly the reverse which happens with the crypto assets, whose use is increasingly costly as there are more operations, because you have to trace back all the previous operations. And the reason for that is that the process is decentralized. There is no central bank to play the role of a trustable intermediary. But this shows that there is a need and people are interested in this. Among the crypto assets are also what are called the stable coins. And the best known is a project launched by Facebook. The name was Libra. They got a lot of problems. They changed the name. It's now called Diem. But basically, the trouble is that here again, it's different from Bitcoin to the extent that it's an asset which is backed by existing currencies. But the issuing body, Facebook in this case, or a branch or a subsidiary of Facebook, would not be regulated and supervised as a bank. Basically, and I should have said that at the beginning, money is a social contract and is based on trust.
All these currencies, all this movement from these technologists, it seems like they are trying to just overcome the current financial system, because that's part of their discourse too. They say they want to, you know, replace the current financial system. Do you this discourse a bit pseudo-libertarian? Do you see that there is a challenge there for regulatory frameworks in the financial system?
There is a challenge because authorities and central banks do not want to prevent innovation. And they showed that in helping fintech and developing many things. And the blockchain, which is the technology behind the Bitcoin, is something which is valuable and is used by many central banks, including the Bank of France. But it is used in a limited sector with not too many interactors because of this limit in terms of scalability. The promoters of Bitcoin or other crypto assets claim that the surge is due to the fact that there was a lack of trust in central banks, especially at the time of the creation of Bitcoin during the previous global financial crisis. This is wrong. There might have been lack of trust in the banking system, but the amount of currencies, of cash, physical cash that was withdrawn from the ATM at that time increased tremendously. The same happened during the pandemic. There was both a higher use of contactless electronic payments, which are used and transferred via banks, which are supervised, controlled, regulated, and simultaneously a higher issuance of banknotes, mainly for hoarding reasons. This shows that in the public, there is both the wish to have physical cash as the ultimate liquidity, something which is you can trust because it is issued by the sovereign, and simultaneously to benefit from all the advantages of digitalization. And this is the reason why many central banks, including the Euro system, have announced that they are launching a project to assess the capacity to issue such a digital currency, which would be issued by the central bank. And so people speak in this case, not about crypto assets, but central bank issued digital currency, CBDC. And CBDC would be like physical cash for retail, universally accessible. It would be totally trusted because it's central bank issued, but it would be electronic, like the transfers you do with your deposits in a bank account. Now, it's not the beginning of the research. Research has been done by the ECB and the national central banks. The Bank of France has already experimented several examples of operation done with banks. So it's not the retail part, it's the wholesale part, the one which is interacting between the central bank and the banks. And the project consists in assessing the user case for a digital euro, and that may take about 2 years. And then I'm pretty sure that the conclusion will be positive and that some form of digital currency in euro will appear, Christine Lagarde said, in about 4 to 5 years.
Isn't there a danger because the society as a whole isn't on the internet, on high-speed internet? Or are we just that optimistic that in 5 years' time, everybody will be having access to a mobile phone and be able, aren't we risking to leaving some parts of the population behind?
We have to strike a balance between two needs or two risks, financial exclusion and digital exclusion. There is a need, there is a demand, and that will be checked for a digital currency, but still some people may not be able to access it. Older people, people who may not easily use digital, foreigners, and so on. And so, most presumably, when the digital currency is in circulation, banknotes will still be used, and one will be complementary to the other. In the same way as currently, deposits are transferred electronically between banks for your account when you have a payment, but you still have some cash at home or in your pocket. But the physical use for transaction of cash is definitely being reduced. And so there is a need to find a complementary process which is appropriate for this time, avoiding the risks which may be associated. The benefits are obvious. You cannot be stolen easily. You cannot lose your digital cash. You can exchange remotely with somebody else using this ultimate liquidity. But one has nevertheless to pay attention to other risks like money laundering, terrorism financing, or cyber attacks. And not only that, but also the data protection about you. And this is why, in Europe in particular, we don't want big techs who basically want to sell your data to issue such currencies. We won't prevent them from doing it if they want, but we will propose an alternative which will be issued by the central bank, and the central bank has no interest in selling your data to a firm. They are not looking for profits. They are looking for the common good.
Working, and now you've retired and you are honorary director general of the Bank of France. And also you sit in several boards. One of them is the Museum of Economics. And that traces back a bit to the history of economics, the history of exchange and trades, the history of currencies as well. Tell us a little bit about this initiative that you've been involved with.
Okay, I'm very proud of this. Indeed, I supervised the project for very long while being the chief economist of the Bank of France. And now it has opened. Unfortunately, because of COVID, it had to be closed from time to time. So imagine it's the largest and first, we may say, European Museum for Economic Education. And in the same way as your interviews contribute to education, this place is planned to increase the wish of people to know more about economics. So you have to imagine a palace, neo-Renaissance style, within Paris, which has been totally revamped and renovated by the Bank of France for several years, and which is now the place where you can access a lot of educational games, funny videos, and which is full of digital. You can know more about it by dialing its website name, which is CITECO, for City of Economics, so CITECO.fr/EN in English. There are a lot of resources, but the best when you visit Paris is to come and see. If you want to spend 12 hours, you can, although you have to come twice because there is so much to be seen. It's not only economics, it's history because of the location and the building, which is just magnificent, but it's also history, geography, and sociology. So it's quite important to mix all these elements.
Indeed.
I only invite you to.
The website is amazing too.
It is. And as regards CBDC that I was speaking about before, I don't know whether you will have the possibility, but I tried to summarize their characteristics in about 1,000 words, which have been published both in English and in French.
Several boards. Also, you are with the Global
Dignity. Global Dignity. That has nothing to do with economics, but it is related to education. Global Dignity is an international organization, and I'm the country chair for France. It was created about in 2006 by three young global leaders in the World Economic Forum. And among the three is the current Crown Prince Icon of way, and also a Finnish philosopher. And it has been sponsored by Richard Branson and Desmond Tutu. And the idea basically is to promote, to preserve, or to restore the dignity which is in everybody. And this goes largely through education. And that's why there is a link for me between these activities in explaining what is CBDC, more generally in giving people more wish to learn about economics, and the activity that we do with especially disadvantaged kids who have been left aside or feel left aside from the general system. And by using many elements like music and dance, we bring them back to school so that they can be better educated. But there are many actions around the world, and I can only here again suggest to Google globaldignity.org, which is a wonderful organization.
Thank you very much. Pleasure speaking with you. Marc-Olivier Strauss-Kahn. Pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.